What's up, everyone? Yes, this is the first episode of the Mind Grinders podcast, a modern mill podcast focused on both, I guess, the modern miller and the modern player. Maybe that's a catchphrase. We haven't figured out the catchphrase. Anyway, I'm your host, aka Shaf. I'm your host, Shaf, aka that mill guy. Join with me is my co-host,
Jack, aka Blitz MTG, because I can remember my name.
Yeah, see, Jack nailed it. Okay, so you can tell already. I hope everyone listening can understand the tone of the podcast moving forward. For our first episode, we're going to keep things nice and simple. We don't even have any sponsors because we're not millionaires. Haha. We're going to go through the competitive events that just passed on MTGO over the weekend. There's four. It wasn't just the challenges. And we're going to kind of go over just some general thoughts. There's a lot to go over there, but I think the primary focus of this episode, as you'll see from the title and everything, will likely be the State of Design article. And just kind of our general thoughts, what that means for mill players moving forward, and I guess modern as a whole, because really that's the format we're in for. I should note that because this is, in a sense, a mill-focused podcast, there will be moments in future episodes where we bring up mill decks from other formats, because success of the archetype is contingent on its success in multiple formats. So, I don't know why my desktop audio is going off. Anyway, we're going to start things off. All right, Blitz, how are you doing? You ready for this?
I'm doing pretty well. Like my friend Chef here stated with the tone is going to be me being snarky and Chef stealing jokes that I said before we hit record.
hey, look. There's it's not in here. So it's my joke.
A little of the exposing. A quick shout out to my good friend David Yanarella, aka Yanny. For helping come up with the name for the podcast. We were contemplating a few names, and I shot a message like, hey, you got any suggestions? And this one kind of stuck out. So shout out to him and his girlfriend Imani, who says she's already our biggest fan.
I love it. See, I'm so happy that we didn't come up with the name. There's no bias in it. I'm super happy about it. And yes, shout out to your friend Yanny in that case. For those of you who don't know where it comes from, please just look up Mindgrind on Scryfall. Don't go on the Gatherer website. Go on Scryfall.
True. Hashtag not sponsored by Scryfall.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, so going into it, let's start off with just the challenges. I'm going to go through just the top eight. We're not going in depth. I'm going just to the top eight. So let's start off with the Saturday Modern Challenge. From first to eighth place, we have Blue-White Chalice Control. We have four-color Velimachus Turns, Niv to Light, specifically with Yorins. We got 80 cards in there. Teemer Footfalls, Black-Green Yawgmoth, four-color Elementals with Kahira. And finally, Living End, and then finally, four-color Elementals with Kahira. So that is our Saturday Modern Challenge. A lot more multicolored decks, but we'll touch on that in a second here. Let's go into the Sunday Modern Challenge. Again, from first to eighth place, we have Jeskai Urza, Mono White Hammer with Lauros in the as the companion, Mono Green Tron with Giganta, four color Creativity.
What? This is the Emrakul Serra's Emissary version.
Oh, Indomitable. Okay, yeah. Okay, all right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few different versions of the Creativity deck running around.
Fifth place, is it Murktide? Sixth place, Teemer Footfalls. Then red, white. Ooh, burn. Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's a little foreshadowing for some of the other events.
Burn, Grixis Shadow. You can tell how much we've done in advance here, because I'm really taken aback by this.
Okay. Yeah, AKA I haven't.
Yeah. All right, so that is the Sunday Modern Challenge. Before we go into that, I'm definitely more familiar with Saturday's top eight than I am with Sunday, because I feel like Sunday took a little trip back time.
Are you perhaps more familiar with Saturday's because Saturday's decks are all named and Sunday's are not on Goldfish?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. All right, so the Modern Showcase qualifier, a little bit more of a high, like, I guess higher showing in terms of the competitive pedigree of the players. So I would definitely, like, take something in between these next two top eights and the challenges as a good average for maybe some decks that you're looking to prepare for. This one is, like, hyper up there. One is more so regular. So, again, top eight, first to eighth, we have five color elementals in first place, with Kahira. Is it Murktide? Amulet Titan. Happy to see that. Burn. Oh my God. What? Okay, Burn in fourth place. Black-red Darcy? Are people calling this Darcy? I heard this on...
Yeah, Dragon Reach Chandler is nicknamed Darcy. Yep.
Like, I was... So...
It's like how Sakura Tribe Elder is Steve.
Kind of, okay, all right.
It's like that thing.
I like it. You know, I've been Dark calling it Darcy Bob. From another podcast, but yeah. Okay. Darcy it is. Is it Murktide in sixth place? Bring to Light Scapeshift, which is pretty cool, in seventh place. And, again, is it Murktide in eighth place? That is the Modern Showcase qualifier. And then finally, the Modern Super qualifier. Again, definitely a little bit higher end here. First place Living End. Jesus, people, pack your graveyard hate. Don't allow this. Congrats to Oscar, though, honestly. Yeah, really. Congrats on winning with Living End. Second place, UI Chalice Control. Again, seems like definitely something that's not just here temporarily from the challenge. Teamer Footfalls, Four Color Creativity, Mono White Hammer. Sixth place is Four Color Footfalls. Living End in seventh place. Ooh. And then Burn! What is going on?
Wait. But that one is Mardu Burn. They're playing Bump in the Night.
Stop. I didn't even read this. All right, hold on.
Yep.
Stop.
They're playing Bump in the Night, and they have, like, Prismatic Ending in the sideboard, so they can get up to three with that.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is so much spice. Okay, all right. Look. We're not here to get fixated on one card. That's for me later. But okay, Jack, thoughts. Go for it. Hit me.
Overall, I mean, Burn is seeing a little bit of an uptick, which is interesting because we haven't seen Burn really shine in a while. Greentron also the past few weeks has been making a comeback after, you know, E-tron kind of made its comeback a bit because Chalice of the Void is really good in the meta. And now Greentron is making its way back. So those are just like two decks that caught my eye. But overall, I don't know. I guess I have thoughts for kind of the overall state of the meta and like where Mill is. Like I don't have specific thoughts on.
I mean, honestly, that's what I'm here for.
The top eights.
Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm here for. Go for it.
So firstly, I've always kind of contended that Mill is a deck best suited for like the smallest metagames possible.
Like as in not as diverse? Is that
correct?
Okay.
Correct.
Okay, yes.
It's when you're able to like tune things like really closely to what you're playing against, you know, that's part of where Mill's gonna shine, unless that like very small meta is just super hostile to Mill. That can be a thing.
Yeah.
But and it's a little bit reinforced by the events this weekend, because as I was looking through and I kind of made notes of like you know, of the top eights, like, oh, what are some good matchups, what are some, you know, maybe closer to even matchups and some bad matchups, and the super and the mox qualifiers had top eights that were less hostile to Mill than both of the challenges. So I thought that was interesting.
I think I can agree with that, just like at a glance. I'm taking your statement and just looking through. I think I can agree with that, yeah.
So even though the super is like a bigger event than the challenges, it's like in theory like a more I feel like in the super you're gonna see less deck diversity because it's like a more competitive event, even though there are more players.
Right. Like, and people are going to pick what works statistically instead of trying something new.
Right.
Like, they're going to, because it's definitely, it's not something that happens every week. It's not a challenge.
Right. And it's like a, you know, like Mill, I think Mill's like not great in like MTGO leagues. I think like Mill does better in challenges than it does in leagues.
Yo, if anyone can confirm that statement,
is you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The 1-4 gang for a reason.
Oh man. Yeah.
So like, you know, Mill's not as great in leagues than it is in challenges, but I would contend even a step further, like Mill is better in like kind of tighter knit competitive environments than it would be in challenges. And that kind of cropped up with this.
So how are you feeling, I guess? So I generally agree here. I think that's very correct. There are some sub discussions that happen every so often. It happened, there was one recently in the Mill Discord talking about why someone was bringing up, why do we play one ofs in our sideboard? And I guess specifically as an offshoot to what you were saying, I wanted to bring this up because I felt like one ofs were played in Mill sideboards to accentuate something that the main board can do very well. That's why you have so we have a bunch of removal, which is why we play one or two board wipes in the side. It's like, okay, we have all this removal, we just need one more thing to shore that up. But then otherwise we will play multiple copies of something like Jace's Phantasm, or multiple copies of something like Soul Guide Lantern, because that's not an effect we have main board. So these are things like the amount of one ofs you play and the amount of play sets you play are really in cohesion with what you're saying, Jack, to what I believe is that the meta is so diverse. I'm more comfortable playing more one ofs because, I mean, the power creep, I don't believe, is there yet in modern, where I can play a couple of cards that cover everything. We're close, right? I'm thinking of cards like Mystical Dispute that is a counter spell, but it's cheaper against a blue spell. Like we're close to that type of card. And I think the amount of one-ofs that a Mill deck has right now in their sideboard is it's how diverse things are, which makes game twos and game threes really difficult. Like, you have one plan game one. And I think right now, like, think about how different, just for our listeners out here, think about how different an approach you have to take against four color elementals versus mono white hammer, or the difference between is it Murktide and Burn, right? Like, deck, the first two weren't exactly like 1-for-1 archetypes, but especially is it Murktide and Burn, traditionally you would think of them as aggro decks, but is it Murktide boils down into more of a tempo style deck, even though it's playing aggressive creatures. And then Burn is definitely just balls to the wall aggressive. So what's good in which matchup, I guess. So it's very difficult to get something like this going, which is why I think finalizing on what I'm trying to say is, yes, Mill is going to have a very difficult time right now, especially in a modern league where you have to be able to do so much, right? And that's in game two and three. Game one, you do whatever you need to do. You just race them. But in game two and three, you have to do so much. You have to answer this. Like, Cauldron Complete is, like, indestructible on both sides. Like, and then it's like you have to deal with, like, all these elementals. And then, oh, my God, people are putting Emrakuls onto the battlefield. And, like...
Yep. That definitely ties into a lot of... I was thinking about a kind of a Mill's decline in the meta the past probably month or so. Like, it came out, you know... Adventures in the Forgotten Realms came out, and like Mill was on fire because of Tasha's Hideous Laughter, and it's just kind of fallen off the face of the cliff. And I think there's like a few reasons for that, one of which is definitely because the format is so diverse. Like, we cannot prepare for everything. And so, like you said, some people take the like a little to cover this, a little to cover that. I've tried that, and it's like, I find it really difficult because you're always going to leave out something, and then you're just, by luck, you're just going to play against whatever you left out. For example, I was playing a paper event a few weeks ago, and I was like, I was really like, I was in the tank on like which sideboard cards to include for the event. And I decided to kind of shave down on the amount of Chalice of the Void hate I had in my sideboard, and I got very punished in two rounds because of it. That's part of it.
And I think, like, honestly, like, I just on a point like that, I think it should be one very clear to especially kind of newer players or less enfranchised players, mill players, I should say, that something like that generally is okay, right? Like, I hope everyone understands that Jack isn't a bum here. I think he understands what he's doing with general with building his sideboards. Like, a lot of times with a deck like this where you have so many ways that you can go thanks to the power creep, like, think about what sideboards were 3 years ago for mill versus what they are now. There's so many more things you can do, so it's okay to just say, okay, I am going to board for either my worst matchups or what I feel like I'm gonna experience the most. So I'm not talking about an LGS level, I'm talking about like a 1k, a 5k event. You're going in, you're like, okay, I saw the goldfish breakdown, I'm going to work with what I think I'm going to come up against the most, or I feel like I'm fine with these matchups, I'm going to work with my worst. If you then come up against the one matchup you did not prepare for, that's RNG, right? And you just play it out as best as you can, right? Yeah, so I don't want people taking away from this video like, oh my, do we need to be ready for Chalice? Does Blitz, should just, why isn't he ready for Chalice? Like, come on, stop.
Okay? No, it was a conscious decision. I thought there was going to be a little bit more aggro in the field.
And that's what I mean. That's actually a pretty fair assumption. Considering what it was, I'm assuming when you were playing, like, Chalice, especially Eldrazi Tron, is a deck that has come back in the last week and a half. Like, it took a really long time for Chalice to come back.
I played against E-tron, and then a lot of the, like the Omnath decks, whether it be Elementals or, I mean, less so Elementals, but they sometimes play it, and then the like the Bring to Light Scape Shift. Those have Chalice. So I played against a Scape Shift player and an E-tron player. Both those matchups I'm normally very comfortable, but when they just stick Chalice on one and I don't have my engineered explosives in my list, and you know, don't see my Hercules recalls. You know. It is what it is.
I mean, you gotta lose to something, right? This is another thing I tell people. Like, the meta is so diverse. We're not in a small meta where it's like Jund and then the combo deck and then the aggro deck and then everyone just kind of like goes back and forth or whatever. Like, we're so diverse. You have to lose to something. You cannot be evenly and actively prepared for everything. Yeah. That's the key.
Definitely. I think so. The other big thing holding Mill back right now is there is so much main board hate for Mill running around.
Man, I can agree with that. Yeah, I can.
So
agree
you
with
have
that.
So you have you know, and a lot of it's not specifically for Mill, except for filthy Elixir of Immortality main deck people. Like, you know who you are.
Yo, like, okay, no, can we just talk about how we gave Urza's Saga to the modern metagame, and these people were like, let's play Elixir of Immortality?
Yes.
Ew, like,
But Shaft, with Burn coming back, I need a way to gain life with my Urza Saga. Like, okay,
people like that whatever. People like that need to play Standard or something. You don't deserve Modern. Okay, go away.
All right. But I'm talking more like the four color creativity decks who often play like an Emrakul main deck. You have a bunch of people that are playing Chalice of the Void main deck to combat the Murktide decks that happen to also hit Mill.
Blue white control Chalice. Yeah. Like, it's not just E-tron, folks.
Blue white control, E-tron, Omnascape Shift. Like, a bunch of decks are playing. Some are playing them aside, but some are playing them main. And that just like incidentally like hits Mill pretty hard.
I mean, there's even like, if you wanted to go even kind of like microcosm, like smaller. Like, okay, so specifically with those blue-white control Chalice decks, okay, they're not playing a full play set of Chalice sometimes. But, like, look, Teferi Time Raveler, Teferi Hero Dominaria, like some number of Shark Typhoons. Like, these are spells with high CMCs. If we can generally agree that Tasha's is what put Mill over the edge, high CMC cards in a lot of these decks, especially something like Shark Typhoon, which is never really being hard cast, it's a cycler. Like, stuff like that hurts us, like, a lot. And then we're thinking of cards like Murktide Regent, a card that not only turns off Drown in the Lock and stops that kind of big piece of removal we have for it, forcing us to play cards like Go for the Throat or Doomblade Variants or whatever it may be. I mean, the card beats down, like, really early. Imagine, you know, thinking you've won the game with, like, a turn one Crab, and then they go turn two Murktide, and you're like, oh, well, what did I just, like, created my own Doom here.
Yes.
So it's a lot of it. It's not just directly the Emrakul, guys. It's sometimes it's just like literally so incidental. It's so micro, but it's massive.
Yeah, it's massive. It's definitely. And then you also have the like the endurance decks.
Oh God, God, it's a 3/4. There's so it much, like favorably blocks Delver and Darcy. It's a 3/4 with reach. Oh my God. It's so good.
You know what it. You know what it doesn't profitably block? Jace's Phantasm.
Ah, there you go. That I knew it. I literally sent that to you mentally. I literally beamed that to you. I needed that to be sent. There you go, modern mill folks. This is how you beat the modern metagame. You play Jace's Phantasm because I won't, but you will.
Russ, our friend Russ is out there somewhere, just like. His spidey sense is tingling.
Yeah, yeah, he's just rolling about Jace Phantasm.
Oh, man. So Mill's, like, not doing so hot. And I think the answer, honestly, is, like, we need to be more willing to play our hate cards main board. And specifically, I think we need to be going back to, like, Soul Guide Lantern's main, like we were doing during the Uro meta. Mm-hmm. And probably, as much as I don't want to, because I don't particularly like this card, probably some number of Engineered Explosives.
In the main? Would you...
Yeah, for Chalice of the Void.
Especially for... Okay, so let's talk about Soul Guide Lantern here.
Sure.
Would you go for so far as to say like Urza's Saga? I personally would think no, but this is more so for the listeners thinking, oh, I can tutor it up. Why or why not?
I don't think there's enough there to warrant it. Like, sure, you can make a couple of tokens and like that's kind of fine, but we're not going to play like a high density of artifacts. There's not a ton on 0/1 CMC that we want to tutor with it. And they're also colorless lands when we're already a deck that really values colored mana, mostly blue, but also black, or if you're splashing for a third color. Like, we've already been trimming on Field of Ruin, partially because of the increased demand for blue mana at every stage of the game.
Oh, Fractured Sanity, really pushing our limits here.
Tasha's is also included there. Mm-hmm. So I just like Urza's Saga is very powerful, but I don't think that there's a home for it in Mill unless you're just... You could probably come up with some brew that's like a Mill like Lantern Control hybrid. Somewhere in there, you know, maybe somehow try to fit like a Karn the Great Creator package into Mill, but like without getting like super crazy down, you know, the brew train, I don't think that Urza's Saga is going to be there, but you know, I've seen some Mill lists with like Mishra's Bauble, and I think Soul Guide Lantern is probably better in that slot. Because even though it's not free value, it, you know, when Soul Guide Lantern is good, it's like game winning, and when it's bad, it's just like budget, you know, Walmart brand Mishra's Bauble.
So, okay, I'll tell you, I don't want to take this into a complete aside here, but I like the idea. So before we hop back into the second card that you were talking about, So Soul Guy Lantern specifically, let's talk about some, let's guide people a little bit here, right? Because we do want to promote the creativity. So if you were to mainboard Soul Guy Lantern,
not the indomitable creativity.
Yeah. Not the indomitable variant.
Ironically, that's my second favorite modern deck.
How many would you suggest someone play? So one, two, or three. And would you like what type of concessions?
You ignored four. No, oh. I'm not saying that four is my answer.
That's fair. You're right. I did ignore four. I'll put four on there. I don't want to lead this into a biased direction. And what type of concessions would you make in the sense of would you shave? Like, how would you fit them in there? Because four cards is you know, they're valuable slots.
Sure.
Are you shaving mill spells? Are you shaving land? Go for it.
That is, I'm literally going to pull up MTGO now, and I'm going to look at a recent list of mine, and I'm going to tell you where I would try to make changes.
And again, okay, not to say that this is entirely correct. This is just to provide a direction, which I think is pretty useful for those of you who want to test. It's pretty.
So I would not.
Yeah.
So I would play. I would play two or three main board.
Yeah.
And I would say,
like, what is this again, when you're playing two to three main board, what is this primarily off the top of your head trying to fight? Me personally, the first card I can think of is Murktide Regent, right? Like that is or Dragon Rage Channeler.
Those are nowhere near my thought process.
Okay, yeah, go for it. Well, like, what are you thinking of beating?
Like, here? Like, sure, it's probably fine in those matchups, but like, even before, I don't generally board those in against the Murktide matchups, so it's not something I consider. I'm looking more at the Living Ends of the world. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Endurances of the world.
Yep. Because again, looking, to those of you listening, four color elementals will play one to two in the main board. So it is something you have to be ready for.
I'm looking at the main board shuffle effects from like the creativity decks. Maybe E-tron or G-tron are being cheeky.
Yeah.
I think I was seeing Cedric Phillips has been playing a Through the Breach, like Titan Shift, like old school deck. You know, sort of that sort of thing. Yeah. And you never know. Like, Dredge rears its head every once in a while.
If Sodex fans have anything to say about it, yeah.
True. I mean, it even has some play against, like, the kitchen decks.
Yes. Especially ones playing, like, Emery and stuff, yeah.
Yawgmoth has been making a resurgence lately, so that it's, like, not bad there. So there's like a lot of niche spots where it's good in, and like I said, the spots where it's not good, it's just like, okay, you pay an extra mana and you get to draw a card. Like,
okay,
it's not the worst.
And it's like, again, it's budget bauble. If you put Luros back onto the battlefield, again, it's a build your own Mishra's bauble because you do return it. So kind of going back here. Not to dive too far into Soul Guide Lantern, what was that second card that you were talking about, like, mill players should now be thinking of playing? So
Engineered Explosives.
In the main board, yep.
Yeah, so I generally don't care for this card, personally.
So why bring it up here? I think, like, what's your thought process here?
So my thought process here is, it is probably the most efficient answer that we have to Chalice of the Void, while also being flexible enough in other matchups. You know, putting E on one feels kind of bad when you're playing mono one-drop creatures.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, I think you're playing, like, how many one-drops here? Okay, so Surgical Visions, 16?
No. No, but I'm talking about just, like, permanents on the battlefield. So, eight crabs. So, like, it feels kind of bad if you have to put E on one, but sometimes you have to get rid of, like, a Ragavan and a Darcy. Like, sometimes you just, like, have to get stuff off. Maybe you're playing the Mirror, you know, you have to get their crabs off the field. And then it has, like, other spots, like, you know, putting it on two for things, even you know, if you're splashing for a third color, putting it on three and then tracking it same turn to get like a Teferi off the board.
Yep.
So, you know, you can, it's flexible while also dealing with the main thing that we want to deal with, which is Chalice of the Void.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I don't see a card that's more efficient in blue and black to mm-hmm. deal with that card.
And I just want to, for everyone listening here, the reason we're trying to answer Chalice of the Void is recognize the five head idea here that, like, looking at the modern metagame right now, like, you just pull up Goldfish, and you look at the metagame, you see the amount of zeros and ones in the CMC cost of decks being played now.
Yeah.
Right?
And, yeah. Yeah. And how... E is also good. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go on.
I thought of more things that it deals with. Getting Sigarda's Aid and Colossal Hammer off the battlefield.
Oh, my God. Sigarda's Aid is probably the most irritating thing. One of the most irritating enchantments.
E for zero to get rid of pesky Rhino tokens.
Rhinos, can't cast Living End. Yeah.
So, like, those are some other ones I just thought of. Like,
there's a reason that Chalice is good. Like, the amount of one drops, as Jack was mentioning here, like Ragavan, Dragon's Rage Channel, the amount of zero cost cards. So this is a card, again, like, it's not for us, but it incidentally wrecks us, right? Like, again, remembering the 16 one drops that we play, especially with Crab being such a powerful card, I think a lot of people underestimate the power. Like, just take another deck, like Blue White Control, and play against a mill deck, and you will see how much of a threat a turn one Crab poses, and how valuable that is to for us to resolve that and have that stick on the battlefield and late, you know, turn two, turn three, whatever chalices stop that, and then again against the other decks it's better against them, but it incidentally hurts us. So we need a way, as Blitz was saying, to deal with something like that. So I think there's value in it. I definitely like Soul Guide. I think, like, just my take is I like the main board Soul Guide again. You're giving me PTSD from how I loved Uro, and Uro was taken away from me, from underneath me.
You can be the minority of players that miss Uro.
Oh, 100%.
Just like how there's a minority of people that thought Oko was an okay card to print.
Oh, yikes. No. Those people need to go back to the underground where they came from. Oh, no. I don't know about that.
Yeah. So, so those are just kind of my thoughts of where Mill is. I also think that there's a lot of room, not only just with experimenting in, sideboard cards becoming main board cards, but also just, like, added or substituted colors. You know, we are going to shout out Mill Discord fan favorite Tybalt of Red Sub here.
Oh, I should note, recently joined, which I'm super happy about.
Recently joined, yes.
I am so happy we finally, after years, we got Tybalt on the sub. Even if they are bad with English, we got Tybalt on the sub.
So Tybalt of Red Sub, for those who don't know, is kind of an enigma of the Mill world. Whereas, you know, until recently, like, their Twitter wasn't popular and they weren't part of the Discord, so it was, like, very hard to get a hold of them. And they just have, like, the wackiest, like, mill lists. They do pretty well in events, but it's just, like, a lot of one-ofs, a lot of two-ofs, a lot of different, like, color combinations. Now, specifically what I want to shout them out about is a list that I want to try a variation of when I have time to do so. And they were playing blue-white mill, which, Chef, as you know, I was a big fan of probably a year ago or so.
Hey, Prismatic Ending, like, I mean...
Yeah, that's a card so, now. You know, but I was playing, like, a very just, like, blue-white control shell and just, like, jammed a mill package in there. And, like... Yeah. You know, I think I top 16 or top 32 a modern challenge with
it.
Like,
sure
it wasn't like awful. Like the deck had legs. But this blew away, and then I played when Zendikar Rising came out and we got the crabs, I had like a normal blue white list that just had like on thin ices and that sort of thing. But Tybalt's list was playing four Ancestral Vision main instead of Visions of Beyond. And the And the reason that they wouldn't play Visions of Beyond is because they were also playing four main deck Rest in Peace.
Oh yes. Oh, this was something. I like it was for all you listeners, like, I don't know where I'm gonna have this linked, but like this was, you really had to look at it. And you, the more you did, the more it made sense, which was scary. Yeah. Like, that was the thing. The more everything started coming together the way you needed it to, and it was really scary. Like, yeah. I don't know who how they came up with this, but yeah.
Yeah, so I didn't like all of their card choices. I think they were playing, like, Silence. They were playing...
Yeah, it was like a one-of. I'm pretty sure Silence was like a one-of or something. It was weird.
What's the card? There's a white version of Darkness, and I don't remember what it's called off the top of my head. It's literally Darkness but white.
Tybalt loves Darkness. Loves Tybalt. Tybalt will play Darkness in their Dimir builds.
I mean, Tybalt caused like a small price spike of paper copies of Darkness.
A small spike.
It wasn't major.
I promise, listeners, we are not tinfoil hatting MTG Finance. Get off our backs, okay? Just know that Tybalt's a god, okay? Get off our backs.
Yeah. So, but like with Prismatic Ending, and this like Rest in Peace Ancestral Vision package, I want to see how this does. I want to run it through like a league or two. I think it'll be pretty fun. The only other card like choice I'm gonna suggest, just like for any sort of mill deck, is with these higher CMC decks, like more of them kind of cropping up, I think some number of Mesmeric Orbs in the sideboard might be a thing.
So this is okay. Yeah, you know what, I think I like this as one of our final touch points before we get into the article here. I've been warming up to this. Someone on the Discord, someone can find it. I like agreed with the concept. I was like, because there's a lot of proactive tap out decks that need to do something every turn, or if you're one for wanting them, they will always need to be tapping out.
Right.
And I was
Well, I even contend it's just like you in almost every situation that you don't want Tasha's Hideous Laughter, you want Mesmeric Orb. Now, there's probably niche cases where you wouldn't, but like I can think in almost every matchup that I am going to board Tasha's out, I would want Mesmeric Orb in that spot.
Okay. No, that has my gears whirring right now. Like, I'm thinking about it. Okay, so I'm gonna you goddamn demon. So four color elementals. I'm boarding out Tasha's.
Yeah, and I think Orb's great there.
Explain why.
I mean, it's not like amazing. Like, you know, they do have Foundation Breaker and Endurance, but like, it's like in conjunction with Hate, I think it's good there because they're constantly going to be tapping out. Like, their spells 100%, are big stuff.
100%.
Other than their like evoke, pitch a spell, but like, yeah, they're just like a big bulky mid range deck that wants to tap out. Blue white chalice control. You and I both know how well Mesmeric Orb does into blue white control.
Whew. Yeah, you just gotta bait them once. You gotta bait them once, or they either don't have it. And the minute you resolve Mesmeric Orb, it's over. Like they need to do everything they can to take it off the battlefield.
They have to Teferi bounce it, and then they have to use a counter spell on it, which involves Force of Negation pitching a card.
Exactly, which is the, like, that is, if you can beat them on card advantage, you've won the mental game. And that's a big thing, right? That's a big thing.
Yeah, and like I think Orb's better than Tasha's against both of the Tron decks. Bring the Light Scapeshift. Basically, yes. Everything yeah. that isn't you know, everything that isn't just like, you know, mono aggro deck, or like, I don't know. Amulet Titan's like a weird case, I guess, because I think both cards are good against Amulet Titan.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's like a niche case there. But yeah. So I think like Ms. Merrick Orbs in the sideboard are worth giving a try.
All right. So for everyone listening, that's again things to consider, being the Mesmeric Orb in the sideboard, the Soul Guide Lantern, and the more so Soul Guide Lantern, less so Chalice of the Void, or not Chalice, sure. Sorry, Engineered Explosives main board. Just to answer a metagame that is really diverse and is forcing Mill to not like be able to answer as much as possible, and this is what we believe is the way to do it. Right, like the final nail in
suggestions.
That cog.
Yeah.
Like that kind of final nail in the cog that may or may not, again, as Jack just said, may or may not be the answer that Mill needs to be like, all right, we're back, right? Like we're here, right? Mill is like, you know, 1.5 and all that stuff, whatever everyone's saying, we're here, but to show up in these showcase challenges, the qualifiers, the challenges, this might be that change we need. And that's what we're trying to bring across to you. But this only happens with testing. So we encourage everyone, like especially with something like Soul Guide Lantern that is relatively, you know, a pretty universal card. If you buy it in paper, it's something that is pretty applicable throughout most decks, I would say, just because of how free it is. It is something that is worth testing. So put it out there. Don't leave it to us, please. Like, someone else do the work for us just a little bit. But I think we'll transition in terms of someone doing the work for us. We'll transition over to Watsy's article.
Oh
right
yes,
right now on
AKA the section where us as two people with no game design experience and no insight into the inner workings of Wizards of the Coast talk about Wizards of the Coast decisions, what we like, what we don't like, what we would change. As is the North American way.
Look, we are designers of entertainment. And Watsy, they're designers of entertainment. I think we're twins in that sense.
Oh,
no,
yes.
No, absolutely. Zero game design knowledge.
I love the transitive logic. Like Watsy makes entertainment. Chef and Jack sometimes make entertainment. Therefore, Watsy is Chef and Jack.
Look, considering the bad faith for Wizards, I would argue that overall our entertainment is received better than Watsy's.
Ooh.
So, I don't know. Like,
we'll see the statistics on
exactly.
The pilot,
I mean, hey, some foreshadowing for what's being talked about in the article, I would say. So again, the State of Design article released just yesterday, August 16th. I saw it. I think Mark Rosewater posted it around like, it was like around 11:15 or whatever in the morning, Eastern Daylight Time anyway, on Twitter. So I mean, just again, the State of the Design article comes out every year, and Mark Rosewater has obviously like on the link. We'll have it linked in the show notes and everything. I guess I have to think about show notes again, folks. This is our first episode. Let me think about this stuff. Mark has been doing this since about 2005. And has been doing one every single year, just going over the past year of the design of Magic. So this year we're talking about again the year of 2022-2021 and how that's played out. We're not going to be going over we are going to be going over specific sections, but I don't want to go through the article section by section. We want to make this a holistic discussion, and we're going to talk about our general thoughts and touch on specific points.
Yes.
So I'm not going to be going through, we're not going to read paragraph one and go through it, okay? Like, you're gonna be hearing this from a bunch of your modern podcasts and everything. So
we're gonna save that for Chef's ASMR audiobook section.
yeah. Hey, spend those points. Did you get that ASMR?
Channel points. I mean, it's really the only thing you can't spend channel points on in Chef's stream.
Hey. Look. You don't gotta put me on 4K all the time, man. Like, okay. So I think the best way to do this is I went through this article just kind of on a top level, just skim through it really. I think, Jack, you've put in a lot of read through this. So let me hear your takes on the state of design of Magic. And sure. Of course, if you have points relating it to what it means for Mill, and I have some thoughts on that as well.
I mean, I have a few that relate to Mill, but it's more just kind of like general Magic mm-hmm. and modern
and
stuff.
And that's important too. Important.
So, all right. So I have kind of three sections here. So I have my props. I have, which is like my pros, like what I think they did well. I have my flops, which are like the cons, you know, things that I think they didn't do well.
I'm like literally writing this down.
And then, props and flops.
This is a future segment.
And then my third section is suggestions from a random pleb.
It doesn't even rhyme. Okay, fine.
I know. Sorry. I'll come up with a rhyming word for next time that this segment comes up.
I didn't even write down our catchphrase from the start, but go on.
All right. So I guess I'll try to pick out kind of some things here. So for props, So most of, if you haven't read the article, most of it is talking about like Zendikar Rising through Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, so kind of that, including Commander Legends and Modern Horizons too.
But we're not Commander players, unlike the statistics of I am. But you know,
yeah, maybe I should play Commander. You have.
I fall into the statistic. No.
You have drank the Kool-Aid.
No. All right, go on.
I have remained strong and resolute. So Zendikar Rising until Adventures of Forgotten Realms. So some things I liked. I think all the sets had really good flavor. I think they're like kind of the atmosphere and the flavor that they were trying to go for. I think they did pretty well.
Honestly, generally, I agree. I think I disagree on maybe one or two sets, but generally, sure.
Generally,
especially
yeah.
recently, like yeah. 100%, I agree.
Yeah. Let's see. I think some like the Mystical Archives. I really liked those. I think those were super popular, and I liked those. You know, bunch of cool stuff in there. The modal double face cards, specifically ones that are spell on one side, land on the other, I think those are a really cool design for the most part. Mm-hmm. You know, people will say what they want about Oops All Spells, like when that was a deck, but like I still thought that was fine. Like I thought those are cool. I'm not as big of a fan of like the spell on both sides. Generally,
also,
I like just,
the
like,
ones from Kaldheim, essentially. Like. I believe that's when they started doing spell on both sides. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Those ones I just like wasn't as big of a fan of personally, but hey, you know, is what it is. Shout out for not bringing back Eldrazi in Zendikar Rising.
Oh my god. We're so done with these if space no, and reality warping creatures. Yeah.
Well, if certain set leaks are to be believed, we're getting Eldrazi in the next year or two.
Like,
yes, but hey, they didn't come back in Zendikar Rising. MH2 I think was really successful. It did a lot right that like Modern Horizons 1 didn't do right. Like, I mean, it shook up a bunch of formats to what most players would consider a healthy spot. You know, it wasn't Hogak and Urza, you know, format forever.
Kind of contrasting to what you're saying here, like Mark Rosewater is saying by kind of terms of feedback, a lot of people were worried about its impact on the modern format and how much was actually going on, that there's so much was. So like,
sure.
Like, is there maybe a specific example that you want to go into where something generally changed that you believe is net positive? I'm just trying to contrast to what...
Now, are you saying like a change between MH1 and MH2, or are you talking about like a change from pre-MH2 to post-MH2?
Well, in that
modern
case, maybe clarify what you mean. Like, are you saying Modern Horizons 2 did a better, like, was better than Modern Horizons 1, but it still had a crazy impact? Or, like I guess clarify what you're saying in that
yes.
case.
Yes, so I'm saying that MH2 was better than MH1.
Okay.
Like, just in pretty much every aspect. And then I think that the modern format is healthier now than it was before MH2. Now, whether I like it or not is a completely different story, but like I think it's a lot of players, even though it's very much shaken up the format, what I see on Twitter is like most people praising like where modern is right now compared to where it was 3 months ago.
I think I can generally agree. Yeah, like I am definitely like completely unbiased in the, like, I'm trying to make an objective statement of, you know, as a Mill player, I'm obviously happy of where Mill is, but generally I see a lot of heads turn at me, like, you know, especially on my LGS when I say this. I'm happy, again, agreeing with Blitz, where modern is right now. I feel like the decks that are being played are generally doing something that's very clear. Like, they're not doing something that's necessarily super complicated or completely out there. It's just a really strong set of synergies, which I'm more happier with. And contrasting, I'm talking about something like Hogak, that like literally did not make any sense whatsoever in any way, shape, or form. It was coming out on like turn minus one. It was like literally a companion that you started the, like, it's just like it was always there, right?
And Hogak was the true foreshadowing to Ikoria all like, along,
and it was just like it was always there. And right now I'm thinking of something like, okay, honestly, Urza's Saga is a powerful card. My take is that it's not breaking modern. That's my take. It's a powerful card.
Everyone said it was like the most busted card in the format. I would say Dragon Rage Chandler is probably the best card from Modern Horizons 2.
Before we touch that statement, everyone, think about how, like, literally, I've heard every modern podcast bring this up at this point, and I think it's only right that we do. The Elementals, everyone got them so flipped. Literally, the black one is one of the worst ones right now. And, like, the green one and the red one are, like, absolutely fire. They're, like, amazing.
Well, I mean, Fury is literally fire.
All right, okay, look, Jack. but it's like, those
I think Subtlety is the worst one, the blue one.
Yes.
And then, yeah, it's,
I can still agree Grief. That one's annoying.
Yeah, too. I was really worried about, like, the Grief Ephemerate combo, because I also just, biasly, like, I really hate discard spells.
Oh, I hate those.
I was worried about that, but, yeah.
I also, like, hate, like, you know, I gotta applaud this again. I have so many side modes. I gotta applaud people for their dad jokes, but like, just because you play Inquisition of Skozelek in Spanish and you're trying to make some long-winded joke about the Spanish Inquisition, like, it's not funny. I don't want to lose my cards. Like, I don't want to lose my cards. I'm not laughing. Okay, don't cast that card against me. Anyway, I'm done with my mini rant about hand disruption.
Well, obviously, it's not a hideous laughter, because they're they're taking that with the Inquisition. All right. Yeah. So, anyways, so moving on from that, along with the modal double face cards, like, hey, white got some good cards for once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Think of like 100%. like Skyclave Apparition.
Oh my God, Skyclave. Okay. Honestly, yo, like, literally, like, in my opinion, like, top 10 cards came out in the past year, Skyclave Apparition.
I agree.
Like,
absolutely,
oh my God.
Agree.
Banger.
Maybe.
What a card.
Idea for a future podcast sometime in December. Top 10 cards to come out in the year.
Oh, wow.
Put in the idea bank.
A Watery Grave reprint? Island? Like, I'm just gonna just name off things that Blue Pairs like.
no, top 10 cards to come out this year is what I said.
Yeah, like Water a new Grave version, a new art of an island. That's important.
Oh my God, no, like, no, not reprints. Get out of here. Top 10 new cards.
Okay. Fine.
Yeah. New to modern through like a
Fractured
Sanity.
MH2 Tasha's Hideous Laugh.
All right. Anyways, okay, I'm going to move on. So my only other props is Watsu recognizes that they need to connect mechanics through multiple standard sets for format cohesion.
So I I want to specifically touch on this as well, because I like that point. I think it's a massive point. I really thought, and they specifically talk about this. Yes. The MDFCs were, okay, I loved the MDFCs. I thought, okay, at first, it's kind of complicated in the sense that, oh, God, yeah, people can't play their clear sleeves anymore. Those people who bought 600 boxes of clear sleeves are so outed. Anyway, I thought it was really an interesting design space to push that. And, you know, out of the conversations of too much text, I thought it was nice that both sides did something very unique, not including call time, where one side's a land. One side's a spell, and I thought the spells were pretty well balanced in that sense, and the lands made sense. They came in on top, but you had to pay three for them. You couldn't fetch for them. I thought the design was pretty good, but I just thought how they translated in Kaldheim didn't really like make sense to me. I thought if they set themselves to one theme, maybe like a land and a spell or something like that, I felt like the cohesion would have been better. And that's just one mechanic. I thought MDFCs would have been a good way to translate things throughout the year, but that's my
opinion. I don't think they were ever going to work. And mm-hmm. the reason being is because the MDFCs, they're not like a synergistic mechanic. What they're do you mean not like... So like... There was no way to like connect the Zendikar and the Kaldheim MDFCs, like even if they were like the same format, because there's not like a modal double face card payoff. It's not
built into the set, right? Like again, folks, we're thinking outside of Charbelcher, like not built into the set or in general in Magic.
And we're talking specifically like Standard here.
Yeah.
Because that's like what these sets are designed for. So it's just like, it's not like a synergistic thing. It's just like a card type, essentially.
Right.
It's a mechanic, but it's not like a standard sets, they need to have some sort of cohesion with like synergies.
Yeah. Especially when you're really talking about like designing for limited or trying to create an archetype into standard.
Right.
You're right. There's no like, it's just a value card. It's not like party or anything.
It's not like Rogues, for example. Like I think they did Rogues pretty well and they connected it through multiple sets. Bangers. Now people will complain about Rogues, but that's not the point.
That's just people that don't play Rogues. That's not my fault.
No,
that's not my fault.
Anyways, so I'm glad that they are cognizant of this, and you know, probably in a year or two's time, we'll see like a very a little bit more cohesive standard. All right, last prop, because I know we're running pretty over.
Just run it. Like, we're here. It's episode like one. Just run it. It's
and
fine.
This is specifically for Mill. Like, hey, we got a ton of good cards like
this is the point,
that almost every set had at least one card for Mill.
Zendikar
Rising, we got Rune Crab, and we got Maddening Cacophony. Shut up, Glimpse the Unthinkable is not a viable card.
I think, honestly, shout out to one of the other big modern podcasts, I'm forgetting the name of the podcast. One of the OGs. Anyway, they talked about how, they straight up just said, Glimpse the Unthinkable was not the type of effect that was going to take Modern Mill to, like, Tier 1. Like, it was not the type of style of card that made any sense to what the deck was trying to do, and that is so true. Archive Trap has like a form of interaction that we can work with, and it costs zero. So you're immediately checking off some boxes. Glimpse the Unthinkable is a sorcery that does nothing.
Yeah. It was filler. It was a long time filler. Like, and Maddening was like, I would say, like slightly upgraded filler.
Yeah, like it was still filler, but it was like, okay, it doesn't target.
You can do
so
more
it's
things.
Like,
it's more flexible. Yeah. It's more flexible filler.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to think of other sets. So, like, I mean, Commander Legends, we don't talk about that because it's nothing's for modern.
We're not commander players. But I'm thinking, like Fractured Sanity.
Fractured Sanity in Modern Horizons 2, giving us some extra card draw that we kind of really needed.
And honestly, again, there. Touching on the fact of not filler, like, this is literally, like, we have talked about how this deck has needed card draw beyond Visions of Beyond for so long. People have tried to play Thought Scour for the longest time. But guess what? Now, you get to mill your opponent for 4 and cycle a card, and also... People are like, why don't you just play Thought Scour? Thought Scour doesn't mill for 14 on the top end, right? Like, yeah. It's actually still a good top deck. Like, at all points in the game. Like, you can cast it, you just cycle it away. Like, it's not filler. Like, it's cohesive. It's actually cohesive.
Yeah, and then... and then, obviously, Tasha's Hideous Laughter is, like, a really good anti-aggro card, which... Yeah. Historically has been one of our weaknesses, and now we're kind of finding with it and with like how decks have changed, now the aggro matchups are like not our worst matchups, but they're like the mid-rangey synergistic decks with a lot of disruption are kind of our problem.
I feel like without, like, I think that's like part of the design of Magic right now, where I feel like especially over the past year, I don't think the article touches on this specifically, but I found that especially for cards designed for more eternal formats, although they might have been designed for standard for answers, cards just do more in general, which allows for these mid-range style tempo decks, because you, again, as we touched on near the beginning of the video, we have cards like Mystical Dispute that is a counterspell, but costs less if it's against a blue card. Like it's just at a baseline. Cards that do more, which can be mainboarded and allows decks like... Ragavan is an extreme, by the way. I just want to say Mystical Dispute is a baseline, and Ragavan is the extreme of that, where if Ragavan goes unanswered, it is literally I win the game. Okay. It is I ramped, I stole your card, I dealt 2 damage, and I'm winning the game. Like, it's insane.
Yes.
So I think that allows for these tempo-style decks like Jund, in a sense, where cards that do multiple things and attack you from multiple angles, no one plays Boomer Jund anymore.
Yeah.
You're playing Isn't Murktide. Yeah, yeah. Lurus Jund or Isn't Murktide is kind of, I would say, the bad mid-range deck right now.
Yeah. So, you know, biased, like, super happy that we got a bunch of mill cards. You know, we are finally in the spotlight, maybe a little bit too much in the sunlight. anyways, all right. So, unless you have anything else, I'm ready to move on to my flops.
Yeah, no, go for it. Go for it. I want to touch on the article as a whole, but I think go for it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I have a couple complaints, specifically about Adventure of the Forgotten Realms.
I should know this is coming from a very active D&D player.
Yes, I love D&D. I love D&D. It's not my number one hobby, but I love D&D. I love the flavor of it. So, like, I really loved the flavor of the set, but I have 2 complaints about the set. First off, why the hell is Party not a mechanic in the set?
Yo, I'm literally drinking water and almost spit. Yes, why? Like, literally everyone. Do you remember? Everyone was saying, Party is so weak. Party doesn't do anything. What is this mechanic? Oh, you know what? It'll be in standard from Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, don't worry. It'll shore up
Makes
over there.
So like, much sense. It's nothing. D&D Party.
Nothing.
It's the rogues, wizards, warriors, clerics. Like
what?
Like and like Brian Overturf, you know, SCG commentator, you know, writes articles about cube and whatnot. Like, he wanted to design a party cube and then just was so let down by Adventures of Forgotten Realms. Like,
100%,
why is it? Why is this not a mechanic? And it also goes back to like not having enough synergy between standard sets.
Yep. It's just one of the things they touched on in the article is how Thorn of Eldraine overshadowed 90% of standard, and I probably 100%.
Well, yeah, because Thorn of Eldraine is just an egregious set,
and this could have been a way, like, this was ultimately part of the failure and the thing that could have pushed Throne of Eldraine slightly away. The lack of cohesiveness and power of mechanics pushed Throne of Eldraine to be the powerhouse in standard, historic, whatever it was. I think
I'm okay with like them not being like super high powered, but like you had to give Party something because it was super weak.
They should also
be focusing on post Eldraine standard because it's going to be rotating in a couple of months.
Like no, in a sense is. That it's, like
it, there isn't a hope. So like with Midnight Hunt release, Throne of Eldraine is out of standard. I believe it's with that second Innistrad. My other complaint about Adventure of the Forgotten Realms is holy crap is limited boring in this set.
Adventures of the Forgotten. Okay, yeah. So I'm not a limited player. You tell me.
So I'm not. So I haven't played it like overly much. You know, there are probably plenty of limited players out there that tell me I'm dumb. I'm stupid. That's fine. I played some limited of this, and I can tell pretty quickly if I like it or not. After like a few drafts or a few sealeds, I hate it. I know it's supposed to replace a core set, which core sets are notoriously very uninteresting limited formats for enfranchised players.
Very weird. Like I mean, again, to the listeners,
and this limited format felt like I was playing a core set, but just like cooler flavor, which is like sure that's a slight upgrade.
That makes sense.
So I wanted the limited format to be a bit more interesting. So that's just that. But like flavor perspective, like I loved it. Relating to my MH2 point about how like modern is in a healthy spot right now, that's good for the majority of players. Me personally, I don't like where modern is right now, and that's because me as an individual, I like those very small, not minuscule formats, not Hogak.deck and then just like two decks that can compete against it. I don't like that, but I like smaller metagames. Like I thought, and people are not gonna like this. I thought towards the end of Uro's Reign in Modern, I thought that format was fine. While I agree that something,
agree.
So even though something from that deck had to go, I acknowledge that something had to go, but I at least enjoyed playing there because I thought the games against Uro decks were interesting. I also thought that just before Modern Horizons 2, where like Prowess was the best deck, but there were like a number of decks that could like compete, you know, Heliod, all that other stuff. I thought that Modern was pretty interesting. With you know, format diversity is good to a point, and I think too much diversity in decks makes things way too chaotic. For my taste.
I think, and you know what? No, this is actually a very valid point. I think this is more so a larger discussion, so I want to touch on it really, but I think it's important to understand that for the general player, a diverse metagame may seem relatively interesting, right? Like, it's like, oh, the format's healthy, you can do whatever you want and be successful. But I do want to touch on the fact that especially for people trying to take the game a little bit more seriously, maybe focus a little bit more on results, or maybe like, oh, I want to beat a certain percentage of matchups and all that. So they want to up their game. A diverse metagame is really frustrating because you can't answer everything. You can't be ready for everything. And Modern has always been a format about sideboards. It always, I think, it, against every other format, Modern has been a format of sideboards and being able to play the game twos and threes, because that's where it ultimately comes down, right? Like a lot of people in older Modern would talk about decks are drag races, and then you turn into something a little bit more complicated in game twos and threes, and that's really hard in a diverse metagame, and especially from a mill player's perspective, as we were talking about earlier, that's really hard with how many cards do so many things, you have to do so many things to answer in return. So I generally agree with you, Jack, here. Like, I find it, like,
but it's
like diversity is fun, but too much is extremely frustrating. Like, if an opponent plays, like, two cards, literally two, it could be two lands. If it's two lands and I do not know what you're doing, I find that frustrating. Like, the fact that they could still be doing, like, five different things because they revealed Lurrus and they played Bloodstained Mire. Like, I find that extremely frustrating. That, like, I don't know what I'm up against. But that's my take.
All right. So, okay. Two more. One Flops. Is...
Yes.
And they're not going to, because we live in a capitalistic society, but there are too many products coming out in quick succession. We need to slow down.
100%.
We don't have to slow down a lot, but we have to slow down a little bit. Mm-hmm. It is just like bombardment of spoilers after previews, after secret layers, after And I'm not gonna go home like ranting about this, because this is probably on every podcast and everybody's
Twitter. But, like, you know, the professor Tolarian Community College has bored this down. So yeah, like,
yeah.
Bigger creators have done this.
Now, so here's my MILF flop. Us MILF players, this year, I think we are a little bit like Icarus. And we have gotten a little too close to the sun. Mm-hmm. And the way I would relate it is, you know, we very much have, you know, we were the nerds of Magic the Gathering, so to speak. Like, we were the nerds of the modern, you know, school cafeteria. You had, like, your Burn and your aggro players. They're like the jocks, you know. You have your Jund hipsters in the corner, you know.
No, I played that card before school. The Jund players were like, if you want to like go into like high school stereotypes, they were like the grade 12s that hung out with the grade 10s and 9s. Like, they were like the older crowd. That's how I took it.
The hello fellow children types. Okay, fair. Yeah, yeah. But like, and you could probably go on with that comparison, but like, we were, you know, oh, Mill is just a meme. Mill is just a meme.
Yeah.
And Zendikar Rising, we got a few cards. First weekend, Alex spikes a challenge and wins the whole thing. And results start getting put on the board more often. And then we get more cards. And we get more cards. Now we're at a point where, you know, a month or two ago, people were just actively complaining on Twitter about how broken Mill was and how none of the hate cards were good against Mill anymore. And we're kind of reveling in it a little bit. Like, you know, we still have like a little bit of chips on our shoulders, but like, mm-hmm. you know, finally we're like a deck that people have to respect. You know, we're a tier deck, you know, we can put up results. Awesome. Now, with that being said, we got too close to the sun because now our wings are melting and Mill is taking a nosedive because everybody's packing hate and they are ready for Mill. And yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I think, like, it's such a give and take. It's such a give and take sometimes. Like, yep. I think definitely flying too close to the sun. And that's, like, I definitely, like, fall into that syndrome, I guess, of propagating it. But it's definitely like it's tough, like where it's like
I'll become this off, so
it's really tough.
What's
like I don't even know how to take a step back. I think like it's not really possible based on like how many cards have been released and how powerful the archetype is. Like the rest of Modern is not really like ready to deal with any of that right now.
So I've got a couple suggestions from a random pleb.
Actually, before you touch on that, okay. I actually wanted to like insert some stuff here. So like kind of going back to the flops here, because I generally agree with all the props. I think there's a lot of micro props that you can add to Modern in general, but generally my prop is, yes, Mill has gotten to where I would have wanted it to be so many years ago when I started playing. I'm happy we're finally here. The flop, I think more specifically, is the feeling that cards are being replaced, in the sense that directly replaced. Not that a, and I think this is modern in general, not that the card has become, like, X card does something different than Y card, so it's better. It's more so that X card is, like, literally the combination of these three cards, so why would you play those three cards? Just play this one card as a playset, and now you have room for all of this. Like, it's like, I think something like that can be taken a little too far. I think a lot of decks have become very hyper-focused, and it's very hard not to succeed with them, which I think is a scary direction, especially, which is my ultimate fear for Modern Horizons 3. I think Modern Horizons 1 was fine. Modern Horizons 2, okay. But when you combine it with the amount of cards and what cards have been added, I'm very scared about the next Modern Horizons and what type of homogenization it's going to do to the format.
See, my fear for Modern Horizons 3 is that we still don't get the other four canopy lands.
Oh my, like, okay. That 100%, that's a flop. That's the first flop. Ignore everything we all just said, because thank you for reminding
us. So yes, like, yes, it's a flop, but it's also a prop because it lowered enemy fetch land price.
Have you seen the price of Polluted Delta, on a side note?
Like, yeah, the cons fetches, whoo!
Yeah, like, whew, those...
For, yeah.
I was so happy. I was able to, like, relatively... I bought, like, a Scalding Tarn the other day for, like, 30 Canadian.
Yeah.
And it's because it was, like, played and everything. But I was like, okay,
Which is, like, Monopoly money.
Yeah, but, like, I could not do that to a Scalding Tarn, like, a couple months ago. That was not remotely possible at all. That Scalding Tarn had to be run over by a car and dipped in a river. And people would be like, oh, I heavily played. $50.
Oh, yeah. Can I get a Scalding Tarn for 15 of these toonies, eh?
Hey, look, that's not a Toronto thing, okay? We don't talk like that here. but that's generally, like, a flop for me. I'm scared about what's going on with cards. Sure. And I think a mill-specific flop that I have is, this is my take, I do not like how this deck is cruxed on Tasha's. I genuinely think Tasha's is the only reason right now that this deck has any form of legs, which frustrates me, because Fractured Sanity was not enough. It was a piece in the right direction, and I'm not gonna deny that card. I would still play that card if it wasn't for Tasha's. It is a step in the right direction. Tasha's is a banger. Tasha's is definitely a step in the right direction, like Fractured, but it's a crux, because the deck cannot beat aggro without it. It cannot, like, do not tell me that this deck is a favored matchup against Hammer Time without that card. I have a hard time believing that.
I agree.
And Tasha's the only reason that we're favored now against that deck, which frustrates me, because if we don't have that, like, I think it's a more so concern with Dimir as a color, like a color pairing, that we do not have the tools necessary to do what 3-color, 4-color, or just other 2-color decks have. That's what frustrates me. And I guess it's more so turned into a Dimir rant, but I think that Mill in general is still lacking what it needs to not... Okay, so I don't need this to be tier 0, but to be a little bit more flexible. I feel like I have more options playing other decks than I do with Mill. Mill is just, like, to me, the main board plan is really powerful. But what happens when the plan isn't that powerful? What happens when you meet that roadblock? And what tools do we have? I don't believe we have the tools.
Well, I think that circles to the Mesmeric Orb in the sideboard discussion. Mm-hmm.
As a way to help shore some of that up.
Because I think the meta is, you know, while there are still the aggro decks out there, I think a lot of things are developing where just, like, Tasha's isn't as effective as it was 2 months ago. So, like, I don't think it'll be a crux forever. I think it has to be right now just of the state that Modern is in.
Right.
I think it's just, like, it's going to be an ebb and flow, just like whether, like, Tasha's or Mesmeric Orb is going to be better, or maybe some of the other mill cards are going to come in and out. But I think printing enough where we can have at least some flexibility in terms of what spells are good when, I think we'll be good.
And like, I think honestly, like, this is something that the Discord touched on. I this is gonna be the final point before we head on to Jack's suggestions here. Is that there really feels like there's only one or two ways to build mild right now. There's like one or two ways, and that's my take. And a lot of people would argue, okay, well, there's really only one way to build Merc, like, you know, four color elementals. There's only one way to build Living End. Okay, I mean, those are like hyper synergistic combo decks in some sense, right? At least Living End. But think about stuff like, is it Murktide, right? Like, think about stuff like, you know, even Humans, that's a tier two deck right now, arguably. Like, there's different variations and different options for the deck. I find that it, compared to the options we have right now, the other options, the alternatives, are worse by miles than what we have right now. Sure. So I would like more options. Maybe that's like a suggestion for the future.
So that's interesting. That kind of leads to one of my suggestions. So I have it.
Hey, if you just do you want to move on to the suggestions right now? Let's just use that to transition.
Yeah. Because it leads to one of them. So okay. One of them is I think Wizards should ease up on printing good mill spells.
Okay.
And not to say that we shouldn't get good mill spells, it's just the frequency in which we receive them.
How would you I can agree on level one, less good mill spells. How would you then feel about printing better answers?
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm all for the archetype getting better cards. I don't need them to happen every 3 months.
Okay, then I agree. Yes, yeah. I'm on board with this. Yeah. I'm on board with this. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So my other two, and these aren't mill related. So for standard sets specifically, which they're doing with Innistrad, but they're not going to be really doing it in the foreseeable future. I want us to go back to 2 to 3 set blocks.
Yes. It felt like Throne's been in standard for 5 years.
Well, it's. I mean, I think the pandemic also had part to do with that.
You're right.
But like, especially when you're introducing like new planes and whatnot, and this specifically stemming from the things, a section that they learned from Kaldheim, where it's just like they jam-packed so much in there that a lot of things felt really weak because they couldn't develop them enough. Now if you have 2 to 3 sets of Kaldheim, then you can really develop the standard synergies. You know,
I think it'll be a net positive on so many angles. Like, people have talked about how, like, the lore has just fallen through, and like, 3 sets helps you not only flesh out mechanics, but like related lore and magic story.
I don't think you always need to do 3, but I think like the Kaladesh block, the Amonkhet block, like that kind of model, worked. So I think like 2 set blocks generally. Unless it's like something that's like really major, you have like a lot of good ideas for, then you can do like a 3.
You're creating more dragon's mazes at that point, but yeah.
Sure. Yeah. But I think like a 2 set, two set block for a plane, I think going back to that would be really, good for standard and for players. All right. My last suggestion, so I touched upon like mystical archives are really cool, and part of why they're really cool is you had those, in most cases, like those really dope Japanese alt arts, they also did it with War of the Spark. You got Japanese artists in to do really cool Japanese artwork. I want Wizards to expand upon that further, but with cultures that aren't just Japanese. So, for example, when we were in Kaldheim, we had those showcase arts with like the really cool knot borders. Why didn't we have Nordic artists do the artwork.
Yeah, I agree. I've never thought about it like this, but yeah.
If we go to, you know, if we go back to Kaladesh, for example, you know, you have some alt arts, have like Indian and South Asian artists do some work on those. Mm-hmm. If we get planes set with like, you know, African inspiration, South American inspiration, et cetera, et cetera. Have artists of those cultures not only involved in like the design process, but in the artwork process, mm-hmm. because you are going to be more representative of those cultures to players of those cultures, but it's going to feel more authentic overall to the design and the flavor of the set.
Especially when you bring up Kaladesh, like I remember the lack of cohesion that people have had with that set. And I genuinely agree here. I think this is a great way to bring together cohesiveness and like making a set memorable, right? Like if there's a theme, lean into the theme. It's not just Ikoria is about big creatures, everything's an 8/8, or like everything's Godzilla. Like it's not.
Well, those are fine once in a while.
But that's what I'm saying, right? It's not that simple, I think. And like I think Watts, you're right, needs to take the responsibility of going that step forward. Yeah. If not for all cards, there needs to be some cards. Like I highly agree here. If we had a South American theme set, then get South American influence.
Yeah, Ixalan. You know, Ixalan, where are all your Mexican and Central American artists on that set?
Yeah,
that was like Mesoamerican theme.
Yeah, there's a lot of like
one of the leaked standard sets in the future may take us to a potentially an African themed plane. I really hope that, you know, we can get artists and designers of those cultures like involved in that process.
And especially like obviously every set sometimes has their own mechanic, like maybe even a mechanic that like makes sense. Like I don't know what will, but like that we're not game designers, but something that not like we're gonna go to an African themed set, like don't like just add some generic mechanic, like bring back Battalion or something. Like I don't know, like don't bring back something else, like work with the theme, right? Sure. Like you don't have to tie things together from before. Like it's all about testing, right? Like try new things. It's okay. Like it's clear that this was a year, and in the design article, of testing, of trying different things. They've done so much this year. So take that feedback, right? And apply it to things that actually mattered, right? Like you don't need to do a million things, but the things that you do, just do it well.
Yeah,
maybe that's just a life lesson.
I agree. And they're doing quantity over quality at the moment.
So frustrating, you're right.
I think if you just bring back the quantity a little bit and upgraded the quality, I think everyone would be happier. Not to say that things are bad quality right now. But I just would like to see that little bit of shift.
It could be higher, right? Like, sure. And that's the thing to always be cognizant of, right? Like, in general, okay, yeah, not everything's perfect. You know, always, like, improve and whatever. But there is a general baseline that I think a lot of things, like, in a lot of ways, a lot of sets did not meet for a lot of individuals. Recently, the professor from TCC put out a tweet that was kind of divisive. I didn't understand. People didn't really get the point of the tweet. But it was, can you name the 10, you know, like, worlds of call time or whatever it was. It was, like, 10 planes. Like, no one can.
I voted in that poll.
And it was like, I can't. Like, it's not like Ravnica. Ravnica was ingrained. Like, newer Magic players, I feel like the minute, like, the first couple of months of getting into Magic, like, you know the Ravnica planes. And then maybe even the, like, look at the cons, like, you know, wedges.
Yeah,
or whatever.
The wedges and the shards. Yeah,
like those are so much more.
I want to see. Okay,
ingrained.
Okay. Oh, I found that poll you're talking about. Yeah, so it's like purely from memory. How many of the 10 realms of Kaldheim could you name and state their color pairing and characteristics? Like now this. The options were all 10, about half give or take, only one or two, or there's 10 realms, and overwhelmingly, the majority said there's 10 realms.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you voted in it. I voted in it, and I can name about half.
But I'm zero. I didn't vote in it personally, but I saw the tweet.
I'm also mega nerd.
Okay, well, I mean, hey, look, you care about the game. I would say, in that sense, you care about the game more than the average player. And this isn't one of those things where, like, if you care a little bit more, you're above average. Like, generally, again, like we've been saying, the average player, Magic player, knows what a Ravnica guild is. The average player does not know what a Kaldheim plane is. All right? Like,
yeah.
That's the frustrating thing, right? Like, okay, yeah. Jack, you care a little bit more of the game. That's great for you.
Yeah.
That doesn't translate into the average player, which is frustrating.
Now, if you do two or three sets for a Kaldheim block, mm-hmm. maybe you're able to develop those realms a little bit better, mm-hmm. and people would know them.
And that's the thing, right? Make them unique to the Ravnica guild. That's another thing that they stated in the design article. They want to make them unique.
That's what they're trying to do with the Strixhaven schools.
I don't think they did. I don't know what your take is. I don't think they managed that.
I think they did in some regards.
To be fair, I think this might have just been my perception. Might just be because this is not a 2-3 set. Like they weren't memorable, but maybe it's because they were unique. It's just the set wasn't memorable. So I'm just trying to divide that in my head. Yes. So maybe that's where my thinking is coming
because
from.
They differentiated. Yeah. Like for example, so Lorehold, red and white, very different mechanics and gameplay than Boros from Ravnica,
which
that's like the big one.
Okay, I'm thinking of it right now. Okay, yeah, Lorehold was a step up. That was a good move forward.
Well, that was like difference.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. You know, okay. Yeah, Witherbloom was similar, but it had its own unique things where I was like, okay, you know, this is something. Was like pretty similar for the most part, or like Izzet and Prismari.
Yeah, like it was very like look at Prismari Command, like it just feels so Izzet, right? Like
Orzhov,
it doesn't feel distinct.
Orzhov and Silver Quill, I think, were like fairly differentiated.
Orzhov in general is a color pairing that has traditionally been underloved, so it's nice to see.
Yep. I think Simic used to be underloved, and the past like 3 years, I think Orzhov has taken that mantle. Orzhov is now the least favorite child.
What good card is in Orzhov? Like Vindicate, that's it.
Yeah, Vindicate now just you know, there's like a few. Quandrix is like,
I didn't understand
from
that.
Simic. But it didn't differentiate because it still did kind of the same thing of like,
that's what I mean. Like, I didn't
plus
get
one
it.
Plus one counters.
I was like, okay. Like this is old Simic. This was literally old Simic, and then they overpowered green, which overpowered Simic, and then Quandrix was just like old Simic. I'm like,
So it's like I think they did some of it was really good, some of it, but anyways, that's it for my notes.
I think we went through
a lot of info.
I think that's
a long episode.
I mean, hey, look, I don't know about y'all, but like me personally, like I like listening to podcasts on a commute. I like listening to them on a workout or whatever it is. So
I also do. Well, not a workout because
hey, look, long podcasts. That's what I'm about. That's what I'm about. So I'm hoping at least our listeners are about it. And hey, look, everyone listening, we will probably shorten them as time goes on. We're trying to keep things a little bit organic, a little bit kind of off the cuff as we go through things. We have notes and everything, but we're trying to keep it there. But hopefully everyone's enjoyed the information we've talked about here. Definitely let us know. I think a lot of the listeners here are going to be more so Mill Discord listeners and Mill players. Let us know what you do. You want to hear more about Modern, more about Mill? Maybe the ratio was great and you want it to continue. And let us know what you want to
feedback.
Let us know what you want us to talk about in the future. I already got some suggestions, but keep it going. And I should say that this podcast right now is likely going to be bi-weekly, bi-weekly, whatever it is. We're trying to get a schedule going. Both of us have very opposite and busy schedules, but we did want to get things going. So definitely let us know what you think.
Two ships passing in the night.
In a way, like, we at least waved. Like, no one's sleeping on the ships, but we're acknowledging, like, hey.
Yeah. Yeah, we're the Titanic and the iceberg if the steerers of the Titanic, you know, knew what they were
what
doing.
What was going on. The Titanic would never sink these days. There's not enough icebergs, but hey.
Yes. That's a okay, that's a good Facebook meme.
Yeah. But yeah, I think we'll end the episode off there. You know, most of you, you know, you have us on social media, or you find us on the Mill Discord. I'm at I'm at MillVat on Twitter.
I am at BlitzMTG. Very very easy. I think. And I'm not an Izzet player.
Yeah. And then I think you're definitely there on the Mill Discord. You're available on the Modern Mill Facebook group. I'm the mod for both, so it's not hard to find us if you had anything to ask us at all about.
Chef streams again. I don't stream still.
Man, I forgot that. I haven't streamed in like, it's been a week, but I'm gonna get it out there.
Yeah, right. I haven't streamed in months. You know, so it is what it is.
I'm at twitch.tv/thatmilkguy. But again, most of you that are listening already know that. But
yeah.
So we'll end the episode off there. Thanks everyone for hanging out. And I don't know. We don't like. We're gonna be putting.
We don't
out
have
generic,
a sign up yet.
Yeah, like we have like. We don't have a great sign off. We're just signing off. We're gonna be putting generic music at the end. Have a good day, morning, evening, night, lunch, second breakfast. Yes. Whatever it is.
Ooh, second breakfast, yes.
Later, everyone.
All right.